You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Monday, November 23rd, 2020. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps and steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer, Will Bunch, will be here to talk about Trump's failed coup and why it's laughable but also no joke. Meanwhile, Trump loses the election again in Pennsylvania, still trying to woo Michigan canvassers and discount votes in Wisconsin. Meanwhile, Biden chooses Anthony Blinken for Secretary of State. More cabinet announcements expected today as Linda Thomas-Greenfield named ambassador to the UN, and the Republicans plan to block and sink many of Biden's cabinet nominees. Meanwhile, Trump jettisons attorney Sidney Powell. Only Rudy is left to disown. And Trumpkins are insisting that Republican voters should abandon Georgia. One can only hope. Meanwhile, COVID rages as too many people plan big meals this week. However, a third vaccine appears to be nearly 90% effective. Biden and Democrats are hoping for a lame duck stimulus deal while Mnuchin tanks the Fed's program. Don Jr. has COVID. Kelly Loeffler might. And lastly, we may be 3 weeks away from a government shutdown. Yes, all this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for joining us. I am joined here by Emma Vigeland. Hello, Emma. How are you?
I'm good, Sam. How are you?
I'm
good.
Got
my earpiece figured out, which is always a challenge for me these days.
Well, that's good. There's, you know, there's a lot of things that are challenging in this era. One thing of note, and we should actually, maybe we'll take more time to talk about this at a later time, but there was a piece just a couple of days ago about the Gowanus Canal. I think it was over the weekend, and they're starting to dredge it. So they do think it's going to take about 10 years. So we there is a clock on the intro of the show. It's possible within 10 years from now, the Gowanus Canal will be no longer industrially ravaged.
I highly doubt that that's going to happen. I'm sure it will return to its natural state of being in no time, Sam. So
yeah. So you're saying that we have it's a loose clock. It's a soft
Certainly.
Break. Soft
right.
break in 10 years.
Right.
All right. Well, that's good to hear. Folks, thanks for joining us today. We are going to have a shortened week this week. We will be doing shows until Wednesday, and then we will be taking Thanksgiving Day off. Also on Friday, we will be taking off. You can go back and you can check our shows in a myriad of ways, but one of them is also on the Peacock app. You just got to search for the Majority Report on the Peacock app, or you search for The Choice, which is the name of the channel on the app. You can see the show in, I don't know what it is, like, you know, as part of their broadcast stream, I guess. I don't know what the word is for that.
Stream works.
The stream yeah. At 5 p.m. and 10 p.m. every night. And then you can watch in between a couple of episodes of Mehdi Hassan's and Zerlina Maxwell's shows. Or you can also find like the last 3 or 4 days of shows on demand. So you could search for the show. You could search for the Choice channel and check that out. And please do. You can watch us there. We have, graphics that are a little bit of an upgrade. I'm not gonna malign our graphics, but Let's get into this. This story about we're going to be talking about sort of the broad strokes of the coup, and in some respects too. Will Bunch is from Philadelphia, and he pointed out that Donald Trump is America's Frank Rizzo. We will find out from Will Bunch what that means. Philadelphians will have a sense of it. But this is what took place this weekend. And I want to make it clear, you know, you hear stories about Republicans are starting to pressure Donald Trump to leave. And to some extent, that's true. But let's be clear. When Pat Toomey does it after the after Donald Trump has lost a major lawsuit in Pennsylvania, he is, as far as I can tell, one of the only elected leaders of the leaders, one of the only major elected Republicans who has said it's over to Donald Trump. He's also, not coincidentally,
not running for re-election. Yeah,
exactly.
Right.
And so there is no courage here. There is no, and I don't even like to frame it in the context of like these people are cowardly, because on some level that implies that like they're facing some type of insurmountable force and they're just afraid, as opposed to they're making a calculation that to be a Republican means that it's in my best interest to support this and to debilitate Joe Biden's administration. I mean, let's be clear on that. And I'm not saying that is, you know, worthy of the firing squad, but let's be clear. That's what they're doing. They need
shades of Jeff Flake here with Toomey, who also left and was lauded by the media as being this extremely brave Republican, somebody who stuck to their morals. No, as you say, it's all political calculations, always and forever.
Exactly. And if I'm not going to be senator anymore, guess what I don't need to do? I don't need to placate my constituency and continue this farce. And I can just, you know, it's probably going to help me in my lobbying job.
Yeah, it'll make me more palatable to corporate America.
And, you know, maybe Democratic lawmakers will be more willing to see me when I knock on their doors 2.5 years from now. Because I was one of the people who called out Donald Trump. But here is sort of the latest. I don't know. I mean, we're watching. I don't know. It's almost like I've seen so many kids, like, you know, sort of like a teen, you know, Avenger style movies or something, which incidentally not great, where, like, you know, the evil villain at the end of it, like, literally starts to, pieces of their flesh start to fly off and they sort of evaporate. That's what's happening to the Trump coup, essentially. Is it's just small chunks of it are just flying off every day. And here is what happened on Saturday. Sidney Powell, a week ago, she was, by all rights, one of the, you know, more distinguished legal minds in the conservative movement. And here she is on Saturday on Newsmax, basically making sure that she becomes even too toxic for the Trump administration.
Let me ask you about the state of Georgia. Obviously, yesterday, you know, the governor there, he certified the election for Joe Biden. It's about 12,000 votes. And what you see, will Georgia switch?
Yeah, that's a total farce. Georgia's probably going to be the first state I'm going to blow up. And Mr. Kemp and the Secretary of State need to go with it, because they're in on the Dominion scam with their last-minute purchase or award of a contract to Dominion of $100 million. The State Bureau of Investigation for Georgia ought to be looking into the financial benefits received by Mr. Kemp and the Secretary of State's family about that time. And another benefit Dominion was created to award is what I would call election insurance. That's why Hugo Chavez had it created in the first place. But I also wonder where he got the technology, where it actually came from, because I think it's hammer and scorecard from the CIA.
Just to clarify, you're saying that Governor Kemp, who's been a longtime ally of the president, is directly involved because of financial benefit in the conspiracy to defeat the president in Georgia?
We have certainly been told that there is evidence of that, and it would warrant an investigation if anybody were actually going to do an honest investigation.
What more could you tell us about that alleged conspiracy? Is the governor's involvement?
I can't give you any more details on that now, but it would certainly warrant an investigation.
Jordan,
if it had been reported to me as a law enforcement officer, I would be investigating it steadfastly.
There you go.
She's going to blow up Georgia. She says it. Yeah, Georgia's going to be the first state I'd blow up. I mean,
well,
first of all,
she is implying is that, and she said this more explicitly in, I think it was in a tweet or a statement, that Kelly Loeffler should not have beaten Doug Collins. Now, I don't know what that means for Purdue. Like, I don't know if that means like all I don't know what it means in terms of the runoff. I don't know that I've heard her comment directly on whether there should have been a runoff. Maybe, presumably, according to her, that runoff was also planned by Kemp and Raffensperger.
And Hugo Chavez, obviously, beyond the grave, which she keeps repeating as if this hasn't been already debunked. Like, does she think it's a Tupac situation and that Chavez is actually hiding and is truly alive working with Dominion and Brian Kemp? As some sort of satanic cabal in order to overthrow Donald Trump?
I only have two answers for you. One, maybe Elvis Presley's involved. And two, there could be a ghost in the machine. I mean, that's a ghost of Hugo Chavez in the machines. But that became even a bridge too far for the White House. Or what was happening is that people are pressuring Rudy. And Rudy's like, oh, okay. I mean, this is a corporate strategy that I'm aware of, is where when you get into a job, you hire as many people as you can below you so that inevitably when there's some type of downturn and they come to you and say, we've got to trim the fat, you're just like, okay. And you could just start slicing. And I sort of feel like that's what's going on here because shortly after that visit, I think it was on Sunday, we saw this campaign release statement. And look, Sidney Powell's been everywhere in representation of the Trump campaign's lawsuit.
Well, she has the power to blow up Georgia. I mean, she said it herself. She's been given that authority by
She's got the authority. She also mentioned that there was, our forces at one point have already gone to Germany to secure servers, which were caught up in this, of course. But here is a November 22nd, 2020 Trump campaign statement on legal team. Sidney Powell is practicing law on her own. She's not a member of the Trump legal team. I don't know if she doesn't have the T-shirt or whatever it is. She's not a lawyer for the president in his personal capacity. This is from Rudy Giuliani, attorney for President Trump, and Jenna Ellis, Trump campaign senior legal advisor and attorney for President Trump. So there it is, Sidney Powell. Now, we will talk later in the program about the implications of this, of course, because it has driven the Q people mad. And, they were already a little bit crazy, let's be honest.
A little bit, huh?
And so people are trying to figure out, what does this mean? Because it couldn't possibly mean that Sidney Powell just keeps losing all these cases with Rudy Giuliani. Rudy Giuliani needs a fall guy. And so she judged. No, it must mean that there's something else going on, Emma. And they're going to get to the bottom of it. So but we will talk about that more later in the program. First, a message from our sponsor today. According to a recent Forbes article, working from home could transform the job market and create global competition for every role. That means, a lot of people aren't going to be coming to the office. Even after this is over, there's a lot of people who assume that a certain percentage of workers are just not going to come home or
Definitely.
Come back to work. Or at the very least, I bet you could get a lot of those situations where like, oh, you only need to come in once a quarter or something like that. Well, it means if you're an employer, you're all of a sudden competing with even more employers to find the best candidates for your job. So how do you get your company and job to stand out? Well, I can tell you how we did it on the Majority Report. You start with ZipRecruiter. And you start by trying it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/majority. So when you post a job on ZipRecruiter, you can tag it with all sorts of labels like actively hiring or remote to attract the right talent. ZipRecruiter's powerful technology identifies people with the skills and the experience that match your job. If you're really interested in a candidate, you want to snag them before they're contacted by other companies, you can invite them to apply for your job if you see them out there. One click, ZipRecruiter sends them an email from you and you stand out from the competition. It is no wonder that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get quality candidates within the first day. I don't know if you know this, Emma. If you've been listening to the show for years, I know that you were probably a member, so you probably didn't hear the ads. But Brendan, we found from ZipRecruiter.
What a great find.
That's right.
It was a huge find. And I had a lot of really talented people that I interviewed. Brendan was I think, literally the last person on the list. And ZipRecruiter went out, found him, got him to apply for the job. He came in, and I've told the story. He was so perfect for the job. As I'm explaining to him about like what we do with like clips from YouTubes and this, and he's like, "No, no, I know, I know." My last job, I was searching for this type of stuff, and I kept having to mute your clips because it was right up my alley. And so I was like, "Okay, you're hired." Now, right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/majority. That's ZipRecruiter.com/majority. MAJORITY. Get the edge on the competition. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/majority. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Okay, want to welcome to the show opinion columnist from the Philadelphia Inquirer. He's also got an email newsletter, too. Will Bunch, Will, welcome to the show. I think we're waiting for your audio to connect. Will, welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going, Scott? How you doing?
Good. And well, let me ask you this. If someone wants your email address or sign up for your email, how would they go about doing that?
Oh, yeah, my newsletter. Oh, that's great, Sam. Yeah, it's just go to inquirer.com/bunch, my name, BUNCH.
Okay,
great. And it takes 5 seconds, so...
Well, people can check that out. I've been reading you for years and years, Will, so it's a real pleasure to have you on the show. I'm here with Emma Viglin, and you've written a couple of pieces that I want to talk about over the past, a couple of days, a week or so. Let's start with and we'll work our way back a little bit. You had a piece about this sort of like rolling coup. I don't know really, you know, and how it's been in many times laughable and hysterical, and it's also though it is not a joke. It has serious implications. I mean, tell us why you wrote that piece.
Well, basically, it's so easy to focus on the joke part, right? You know, Rudy Giuliani's got stuff running down his face or running down his wherever. We don't know what's going on with that. You know. These insane arguments, Sidney Powell getting fired and Trump's record in these court cases, I think is 1 in 30, if I'm not mistaken. It's probably worse since the time I got on the computer to talk to you. So I've seen a lot of takes on this where people say, look, you know, this isn't going to succeed, or, you know, Trump is just trying to build up his brand. He's trying to keep his base pumped up. He wants people to keep giving money to these funds that end up basically going in his pocket. And I think we have to just take this coup attempt. We have to call it what it is, and we have to just take it incredibly seriously, because basically you have the elected president of the United States who has all sorts of power at his disposal, using that power, abusing it, frankly, to try and overturn vote counts. He's filed lawsuits contesting the voting procedures, and I mean, it's within his rights to do that. I mean, these suits are frivolous and they're all getting thrown out of court, but and certainly in a state that's close like Georgia, he has a right to ask for a recount, which he's done 3 times now. I mean, all of those are within his rights. What he doesn't have a right to do is you know, wine and dine state legislatures or get on the phone with these obscure officials from the Wayne County Board of Canvassers, which, you know, I was very happy in my life not knowing there was such a thing as the Wayne County Board of Canvassers, right? You know, using his presidential power to try and say, even though the other guy got more votes, I want you to use some sort of fiat or use some sort of magical power to certify me as the election, as being elected, or, you know, send people to the Electoral College who'll vote for me, even though Biden got more votes in your state. That's a coup. You can call it a legislative coup or give it some fancy name, but whatever name you want to call it, it's basically a coup in the sense that it's trying to stay in power by undemocratic means. And we need to call it that. And there should be consequences for doing it.
Well, I mean, he quite literally wined and dined them. He gave Michigan state legislatures Don Perignon, and which is, I think, between $500 and $700 a bottle or something like that. I mean, if we saw a leader of another country in what the West likes to call third world, or it's slightly offensive, but if we saw a leader in another country do something like that, we would bemoan how undemocratic and how awful it is. And yet I feel like we're not looking at what's happening right now with the seriousness that we would if this was happening in another country.
Right. I mean, there are clearly, there's a strong potential that criminal statutes are being violated here. You know, what you just talked about, you know, these legislators getting flown to Trump's hotel and getting $500 bottles of champagne certainly could be construed as bribery, you know, or extortion. You know, one thing I read that Dana Nessel, the attorney general of Michigan, you know, is actually looking at some of these things. For example, when these two Republicans on the Wayne County Board of Canvassers filed an affidavit to not certify the votes after getting pressure from Trump, were they committing perjury? You know, so and I would argue there's a broad theory of election tampering here. I mean, let's talk for one second about Lindsey Graham. I mean, who's a senator from South Carolina, getting on the phone and calling up the Secretary of State in another state, Georgia, and asking him to count the votes in such a way that basically votes that have been ruled legal everywhere else wouldn't be counted. I mean, it seems to me that's a form of election tampering. Now, I do think probably under the current, I'm not a lawyer, but my hunch is that under current laws, that would be a difficult case to prove in court. Probably most prosecutors wouldn't bring it, but one of the arguments I made in my column is maybe we should strengthen the laws then, because it is election tampering.
And before we get to the sort of the legalistic aspects of it, because I think, you know, this is such a gray area in terms of, like, you know, what constitutes a coup. Like, we have situations where, you know, we have people in this country said that, you know, we saw a coup in Bolivia because there was the extension of terms was sort of illegitimate because the court was stacked. And I mean, you know, that things technically went through a legalistic process, but people who want to see a coup there or see something untoward say, well, that was because, you know, the Supreme Court was manipulated or something to that effect. I mean, my point being that do we have a tendency in this country to look at what's going on here as being too, you know, from a strictly a legalistic perspective, with some notion that our laws can't be manipulated in a way that makes things legal, but they're still wrong. I mean, that's where we're at, right? At this point, is like, you know, we're in the this is wrong territory as a political matter as opposed to a legal matter.
Yeah, I think that's right, Sam. I think, you know, I think this whole thing with the state legislatures, right? The idea that in Michigan or Pennsylvania that Republican-led legislators could just assume the authority to appoint electors regardless of the number of votes in their state, of who got the most votes. I mean, that whole theory hinges on basically some ambiguity in the Constitution. I mean, the presidential election process, including the Electoral College, I think we can all agree was a far from perfect process that's led to a far from perfect outcome. And this language about legislatures appointing the Electoral College members as they deem fit. Well, basically every state since around 1800 or so is deemed that the person who got the most popular votes in their state is the person who gets the electoral votes. And there are laws on that books, but Trump is seizing on this vague language to try and say that there's a legalistic frame for what he's doing. When clearly it's just wrong. I mean, we all know it's wrong. We all know that if Biden got 150,000 more votes in Michigan, sending electors to Washington or to the Electoral College voting for Trump is wrong. I mean, whether it's legal or not.
So one of the things that strikes me is that, and I think it's hard to prove this, but I think if things were closer, people would be taking this more seriously in some ways, right? I mean, in a whole host of things that would have to be closer. But one thing that has been fairly consistent is, Pat Toomey has come out and said, hey, now after this Pennsylvania case, Joe Biden's really is the president of the United States. Well, Pat Toomey's not going to be here in 2 years. The rest of the Republican lawmakers in the Senate, maybe there's one or two that have, dissented or vaguely, but in the House, the RNC, they have all been, I would say fairly, if not totally supportive of the president going after this. At what point do we as a society hold to account the enablers of Donald Trump in this situation? And B, who's responsible for first doing that, right? I understand, you're writing a column about it, but where is the opposition party that should be, sort of like shining a light on the enablers of Donald Trump?
Right, which is why I just gave a shout out to Dana Nessel, the Michigan AG, because I think she is a good example of somebody who's doing her job and doing what she should be doing. Absolutely the Democrats could be more forceful. The Democrats in Congress don't have to sit there and watch this. I mean, they have certain powers. I mean, as I pointed out in my column, and you can make the case it's ridiculous. I know there's only 2 months left in his presidency, but theoretically, if this thing gets further, right, the House could impeach Trump again. And, maybe some of these Republicans who claim, like Pat Toomey, who claim they're fed up with what Trump's up to these days, could maybe go along with an abuse of power impeachment. And the reason for doing that would be impeachment usually contains language, or it's believed that if somebody's impeached, they can't hold or run for that office again. And right. So, an impeachment of Trump, because he's clearly abusing his power, and an impeachment would mean, not only would it end these shenanigans for 2020 and 2021, but it would mean that he couldn't run for the presidency in 2024. I don't know what Congress has on the table for this. I mean, they're just kind of sitting back and hoping it goes away. You're right. The silence that equals complicity has just been astounding. I mean, we had one Republican senator who's actually up for re-election 2022 come out this morning, Rob Portman, and good for him. Let's give credit where it's due, but that's one. There's 190 Republicans in the House of Representatives, and almost nobody is signed on to this. And obviously, not to go too deep into the weeds, but I mean, gerrymandering gives these people safe seats and the safety. And I know you've talked about this on your show, but it gives people the safety to indulge in these conspiracy theories and these fantasies of a Trump landslide and get away with it because their districts are almost impossible to lose. I mean, what is galling, though, and you mentioned it briefly, is the National Republican Party. I mean, they last Thursday or Friday tweeted a clip of this now fired Sidney Powell, the Trump attorney, saying that Trump won in a landslide and we're going to prove that he got the most votes from the people who believe in freedom. I mean, it's insane and it's outrageous. And the National Republican Party is tweeting this. I mean, you know, we sell this whole idea of American exceptionalism on the fact that we have a two-party system, you know, and if one of the two parties is that far off the rails, is it really a democracy anymore?
Well, you know, she wasn't in any way affiliated with any of this, Will. She was just she was just one of the most fortunate attorneys in the country to be holding a press conference simultaneously as there is another press conference by all of Trump's lawyers there, and they just decided to combine them each time.
That's right. Boy, was she in the wrong place at the wrong time, right?
Yes. Or in the right place at the right time. I mean, for somebody who apparently has no client. Let me ask you about this. You cited in your piece in the Inquirer an essay by Indy Samarajiva, who lives in Sri Lanka, and the title of the piece was "I Lived Through a Stupid Coup. America is Having One Now," and he basically argues that like we've already lost. I mean, right. To the extent that and explain that concept.
Well, I mean, it's just the kind of weakening of faith and weakening of belief in democracy. I mean, he also in the piece, he talks specifically about his experiences in Sri Lanka, which, as he writes in the piece, had kind of a ridiculous coup where legislators were throwing hot pepper, I think, in the eyes of their opponents and, you know, on the legislative floor. And anyway, you know, people took to the streets and they, you know, tamped down this coup, and it was a great victory for democracy. Except, as he points out in the piece, a couple of things which I think are legitimate concerns for the United States. One is that it was very hard for the legitimate government in Sri Lanka to govern after that, that they've been weakened because of a loss of authority and a loss of faith, et cetera. And the other thing is about 3 or 4 months after this failed coup, they had horrific violence in that country. They had a series of Easter Sunday morning attacks in places of worship and hotels, and I believe 249 or 269 people were killed in this violence. So it's just a reminder of that we can't just look at this coup attempt by Trump and look at it in terms of, is he going to stay in office or not? Because I think most of us think it's pretty certain that he's not going to stay in office 1 second past noon on January 20th. But the real questions are, you know, what has it done to our faith in the system going forward? You know, what type of violent revenge plots is it spawning on that side of the divide? Those are all real concerns, and the longer it goes on, the more serious the effects of this. I think a day or two after the race was called for Joe Biden, I think it was really only a small number of rank and file Republicans would say that the election was stolen or unfair. But after 2 weeks of this, the latest polls have shown, I've seen a couple polls anywhere from 50 to as high as 70% of Republicans now think either the election was either not fair, or I think it's 70% think the election wasn't fair, and you can find maybe 50% who think that Trump actually won the election. And that's the environment that we're going to be trying to go forward against the coronavirus, against the recession, against climate change.
I mean, there's sort of like two. It feels to me like there's two sets of parallel problems with that. One is articulated by the fact that if Mitch McConnell could deny Barack Obama a Supreme Court justice by just basically saying like, yeah, we're not the process. We're just not engaging in that. We're just not going to even engage in the process. We're not even going to pretend to have a hearing and to reject them. We're just not going to engage in the process. I imagine they're going to do all of that with the cabinet secretaries. There will be one or two that they pass. I have a feeling like on health and national security, maybe they'll let a couple of those officials go by, but they'll shut everything else down. And there will be, to the extent that there was any concern about what he did with Garland, I think there's going to be even less concern in this instance, right? Because you're going to have the majority of the Republican Party are going to like, well, yeah, of course, Joe Biden didn't even win the election, so why should he get a chance to have a cabinet? And then there's this sort of like a broader and so the workings of our government are going to suffer. And then there's like a second order problem that like, well, the workings of our government, you know, like there's the process that is going to suffer. And then there's going to be the where the rubber meets the road, where our government can't effectively deal with what's going on here, with already this sort of notion of like, we couldn't even hold an election that was not controversial. Where does that leave us with sort of like both, you know, one is more of like a problem for sort of, I guess, more high information voters or insiders or, you know, savvy people. And the other one is just sort of like your average person on the street who's just like, this is useless.
Yeah, well, I think we're going to have to see how this plays out in practical terms. You know, I mean, all of this is going to happen January, February, March of next year against the backdrop of, you know, that, I mean, the coronavirus numbers, the way they're going, will probably be spiking right around the time of Biden's inauguration, right? And I mean, not to go too deep into American history, but so much of this situation reminds me of everything I've read about what it was like when FDR took over for Hoover, right? You know, Hoover basically refused to help FDR in any way get his programs going before the inauguration, which you may remember back then was March 4th. So they had to wait this interminable four and a half months for FDR to become president. And by the time he took office in March of 1933, I mean, some people were calling for a dictatorship. I mean, the recession was out of control. I mean, the depression, I should say, was out of control. I mean, they had to close the banks for a few days to restore confidence, and amazingly somehow they pulled it off. But I mean there's a reason he said the only thing we have to fear is fear itself, because things have devolved to that point. And I think the scenario that you described, you know, where we have a president who can't even get his kind of, you know, and the people that Biden is putting out there either flip the names he's voted or the people he's actually appointed, you know, they're basically the most boring,
right,
efficient, and I think good, and not some, few of them are not good, but many of them are good people, very bland, non-offensive, you know, and the idea of somebody like Blinken or some of these even less controversial choices not getting confirmed is just, will show that we're gridlock. And I think so many people have lost so much faith in the system, or so it seems. I guess the countervailing argument to that is that 155 million people or so many who voted on election day, that's good. But if people see that nothing's changed by the spring, you know, it's a recipe for mass disillusionment. And I don't know what that leads to, but probably something not good.
I want to turn to your piece about Frank Rizzo, because tell us who Frank Rizzo was and why you think that Trump has become all of America's Frank Rizzo.
Well, Frank Rizzo was kind of the original law and order guy. I mean, unlike Trump, I mean, he actually was a cop, a lifelong police officer who rose through the ranks, partly
in Philadelphia.
Partly by getting tough on African-American rioters during a big uprising in 1964 in Philadelphia. That really boosted his profile as a guy who got tough. He, you know, there's a famous picture of him showing up at a riot type situation, coming from a dinner, a black tie dinner, and he's got a nightstick in his cummerbund of his tuxedo. And that picture kind of sums up the image that Frank Rizzo gave. And then so he became the police commissioner in the 60s, and then in 1971, he ran for mayor of the city, and super popular with working class, white, ethnic, you know, Italian American like himself, and also Irish American voters, Catholic voters, did very well in those communities, you know, other white ethnic groups, and served two terms as the mayor, was generally despised by the black community in Philadelphia, lots of incidents of police brutality while he was the mayor. And I mean, Trump's been compared to Rizzo before because obviously they're appealing to the same base. Rizzo was also very politically incorrect. You know, he said if he would treat his enemies, that he would make Attila the Hun look like a gay slur was what he used. But so the kind of the original politically incorrect politician. You know, so Trump really took on that style. I mean, the reason I wrote the column is what dawned on me is Trump is presumably, hopefully, leaving office, is that Rizzo, after he became mayor, never gave up trying to get back. He actually tried to change the city charter because there was a two-term limit. He tried to get that changed so he could stay in power. That was rejected and really was kind of the first kind of sign of black political power in Philadelphia that they voted that down. But that didn't stop him from running twice against Wilson Good, who was the city's first black mayor. He even switched parties from Democrat to Republican in an effort to stay, you know, stay in power. And he used the media as his megaphone. You know, he became a radio, very popular radio host in Philadelphia. And he used that to stay in touch with his base. And he really never stopped being the kind of unofficial bona fide king of the white ethnic community in Philadelphia, even though he was no longer mayor. And, you know, it seems like in doing that, he left like another blueprint for Trump, right? Because, I mean, Trump, oh, and by the way, I should mention that Rizzo is, he kept running for mayor until finally in 1991, when he shocked everybody by once again getting the Republican nomination, he actually keeled over and died of a heart attack while he was out campaigning. So, you know, I mean, here's Trump. I mean, he's planning to run in 2024. Once he leaves the White House, you know, if he lost in 2024 and if he hasn't keeled over from all the Kentucky Fried Chicken by then, I mean, he'd probably run in 2028. He certainly wants some media presence for himself. As others have pointed out, the rumor that he wants to start his own TV network probably isn't true because it's just too much work for him. But he's certainly going to find a place where, you know, he's certainly going to be, you know, if he's not getting along with Fox and Friends, he's going to find some similar outlet to call in. And, you know, we're never going to be rid of him. You know, it's, you know, like Veep or like House of Cards or these TV shows where the main character rises up to become vice president and then president, and then they like lose and then they have to come back. I mean, it's like for Trump, the presidency wasn't really the grand finale. It was like season three of a six-season reality show, you know, season four is a comeback, right?
Here's the question I have, you know, relative to Rizzo. And it's funny, you know, I remember clips of video during some of the Black Lives Matter protests and there being like these gangs of middle-aged white guys with baseball bats walking around and patrolling their neighborhoods. I've seen, you know, these clips in Philadelphia. And
yeah, this
to me seemed like the quintessential Rizzo voters. But here's the real question is after they lose, because I think, you know, we know the concept of somebody losing and sticking around, right?
Yeah.
Because Sarah Palin gave us that for at least, you know, three or four years. I mean, she was, you know, up until, you know, 2012, I think, like, you know, when Romney sort of came to the fore, she was still the dominant Republican avatar. And she was going around the country holding rallies.
A similar political brand to Trump, too. So it's
very
quite analogous,
similar.
Except Trump has way more of a presence in the public's lexicon and mind, obviously, now that he's president, but even before that. So it could be even longer lasting.
Right. Yeah. But here's the question, though, is that after Rizzo loses, does the sheen come off a little bit? In other words, like does losing for a guy like that somehow undercut the brand enough that you know he's not going away, but
yeah,
is he, what's the trajectory after that?
Well, that's a great question, and I think it is relevant for Trump, and here's why. Because I think his white base of supporters blamed his loss on demographics. You know, I mean, Philadelphia was a city that over the years had gotten more and more non-white. And when he left office, and then in 1983, when Wilson Good, the city's first black mayor, narrowly defeated him, that was just seen as a sign of the whites were losing control of the city, and this was now becoming an African-American run city, and it was a question of demographics. And so Rizzo didn't really lose his sheen because he was still, I mean, to the, you know, 47%, use a Romney number, you know, of people who, of whites in Philadelphia, not to all of them, obviously, but to the working class, more conservative base of white voters in Philadelphia, he was still their mayor. And he didn't lose because he was a bad mayor, even though by all descriptions he did actually run the city pretty badly during these two terms. And it wasn't because he was corrupt, although there were some issues there too. But It was because of demographics. And I think, you know, this is the argument you see today on the Republican side, you know, that you know, starting with the Tea Party, which, you know, I think you and I talked about a couple times 10 years ago, you know, was driven so much by this fear that the United States was becoming a non-white nation, that there would be, that whites would be a minority in the United States by 2050 or 2042, it depends which survey, you know, and that this was such a driver of fear that that they wanted their country back, as the woman famously said. And, you know, Trump is always going to be the king of that. And the fact that, you know, the fact that he did a terrible job as president, the fact that he totally mismanaged this coronavirus crisis, and that probably 150,000 excess people died because of his mismanagement. You know, you would think that would be held against them, but I think to these people who just see things in these more, I don't even know what the word is, these more cosmic terms, that this is a war for the future of civilization, and like the, you know, the details like coronavirus or 15 million unemployed people are just details, you know, and that's what I think the future is.
I know that we did talk about the Tea Party 10 years ago. Are we talking about the same people? I mean, you know, when we talk about like Reagan Democrats, or I should say the moral majority, and then some iteration of Reagan Democrats, maybe that's a slightly different cohort of people. But are we talking about have we been talking about the same people, but just putting different labels on them because their branding is different? I mean, are there Tea Party people who are like, you know what? I thought that these guys were the answer, but they're not. I'm going to vote for Biden, or I'm just hanging up my tri-cornered hat, and I'm going to go take it easy now. Like, are we just talking about the same people? They just have a slightly different,
I mean, thrust. It's hard to generalize, but I think you can pretty much draw a straight line from the Tea Party into Trumpism. I mean, the Tea Party was a weird thing in that, you know, it got so much attention for a year or two, and I wrote a book about them. And and then right around 2012, actually, coincidentally or not, it was right after the Gabby Giffords shooting, when I think Fox News right after that decided to cut off Glenn Beck and cut off some of the oxygen to the Tea Party. And the thing, I mean, the big difference between Republicans and Democrats in this country is, you know, Republicans and conservatives are just such top-down people that they really, you know, take orders from authority, authoritarians, whatever you want to call them, at the top, and not just Trump, but like Fox News. And like, you know, when the Tea Party decided that there wasn't, when Fox News decided there wasn't a Tea Party anymore, that basically ended the Tea Party, which is kind of crazy. But like you said, those people didn't go away. I mean, going back, you mentioned the Reagan Democrats, and I mean, you could go further back, right, to the John Birch Society and the paranoid style in American Life by Richard Hofstadter, which was written in 1964. And you can say these people have always been around. But, you know, I think there's always been a kind of socially conservative white working class in this country. But I think their allegiances haven't always been the same. I mean, the people that we called Reagan Democrats were Democrats in the 60s and 70s and did vote for Lyndon Johnson. And I think Hubert Humphrey carried Western Pennsylvania, which is kind of the home of the Reagan Democrats in the late 60s. And so these people did have groups like labor unions that encouraged them to support more progressive ideas. And then labor unions, as you know, right, really weakened in the 70s and particularly in the 80s after Reagan and after the air traffic controllers strike. And you know, what moved in, you know, talk radio, then Fox News, and now finally the internet and Facebook and QAnon. So these people have been increasingly rudderless, and they've been buffeted by these waves of misinformation, which is why I think it just keeps getting worse and worse. And I think, you know, the Tea Party was bad, but I think Trump and Trumpism has been worse than the Tea Party. And I think it's partly just the deterioration of this whole misinformation blizzard that's out there.
Well, all I can tell you is get working on that QAnon book, and we will revisit. Will Bunch, columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer, we will put a link to your pieces and to your newsletter sign up at majority.fm. Thanks so much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks, Sam. Thanks for having me. Thanks a lot, Emma. Thanks, both of you guys. Thanks. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
All right. Going to take a quick break. Back in a moment with more. Before we go, what's fascinating now and what I think sort of broke open in the Sidney Powell accusations about Georgia was the tension that exists here. You know, early on, we heard reporting that Mitch McConnell and the Republican caucus felt that maintaining Trump's engagement and this type of sense that it was stolen from Donald Trump would help in Georgia. And I think to a certain extent, there was also Mitch McConnell's thinking like, well, we've got to line up behind Trump so that Trump will come in and help us in Georgia because the control of the Senate is in balance. I don't think that we're going to have it. Even if the Democrats win, I don't think it's going to be a boon for progressives, but it's going to be at least an ability to do some of the basic functioning of our government. And Powell highlighted the conflict that exists, right? Because if you're going to say Georgia was stolen, well, it was stolen by Republican lawmakers and Republican officials. And they're also holding this vote here. And they also held the vote that made Kelly Loeffler win over Doug Collins, who was the favored Trump candidate. And this all starts. And then the other sort of like contradiction is, well, what happens when they give up the ghost that, in fact, Trump did not win the election? He did not win Georgia. That necessarily has to happen weeks before the special election. And on some level, we're watching this problem like rear its head. Here's clip number clip number 13, and this is from Dave in World 2, I guess, on Twitter, and it is footage from a rally in Georgia that I don't know, raises the problem that you're going to have in terms of Republican support for Loeffler and Perdue. And we should, it's going to be an uphill battle. It's Democrats don't do well in these situations traditionally, but who knows?
And if Republican traitors like Kemp are not willing to show up for us,
and Mitt Romney
and the rest of them, then we will not be willing to show up for them. Treason. Is a traitor.
Yeah.
Where's Governor Abrams?
Brass Biden is a traitor.
Brass Biden.
Any Republican that allows this to happen is complicit, and we will finish you.
Enemy.
Death to tyrants.
Do they think that we're just going to go away?
No! Stop the steal!
For any Republicans not explicitly helping Trump to stop this deal, we will make sure you are never elected ever again.
I mean, honestly, like, my first inclination is like, are these Democratic operatives?
Yeah.
like
arrest, like, Biden. Like traitors.
Like, I mean, I just honestly, like, I'm like, if Project Lincoln was actually going to be effective. What they would be doing is financing these type of rallies, right? Where they would send down people and like, you guys are Republicans now, and here's what you're going to do. You're going to say, we're not going to participate in this because, I mean, this, I don't know if it's going to make a difference, but I can't imagine if you are a Democratic operative in Georgia that this isn't like giving you some measure of hope. I mean, this is what you want to do. You want the Republican division. You want the Republican coalition to be, or to the extent it's a coalition, you want the Republicans to be divided. You want them to have some ambivalence about going out and voting in a special election.
Yeah. I mean, to me, I'm a bit more pessimistic about that prospect just because Loeffler and Perdue have both called for a recount of Georgia, have both been very deliberate in the fact that they're trying to stay on Trump's good side. And really, when it comes to just raw emotion and anger for the Republican base, it's not that complicated. It's going to be more straightforward in the fact that they want to just basically stick it to socialist Biden. I think what it really is going to come back to is the Democrats stole the election. They're going to say, how are you going to fight back against the Democrats?
Right.
And it will always return to voting for the Republican. So while I feel this is amusing, I don't know if it has a longer lasting effect in terms of might just be marginal in terms of who turns out for Loeffler and Perdue, but that could be enough. We don't know. I just do think that eventually they'll return back to anger at Democrats, anger at socialists, you know, death to Biden, whatever they want to say.
Yeah, I think that's the safe bet. I do think that's the safe bet, but it is an interesting sort of a twist here where, you know, in this year, who knows? Everything is sort of, is extremely hard to predict. It is hard to assess whether, you know, like, I mean, the Trump people want to distance themselves from Powell. And presumably it's because they're getting pressure from other Republicans, and maybe Rudy Giuliani is getting pressure from other Republicans. But she doesn't have to stop going on World Net Daily or OWN or One America, whatever these. I mean, she doesn't have to stop. And it's going to be interesting to see if she continues to get play in that sort of subterranean, semi-subterranean Republican news or media world. Because if she does, she doesn't care about those two runoffs. She cares about what's happening with whatever her Q-inspired.
Hugo Chavez taking over the United States.
That's no joke, people in Georgia. I mean, if you want to keep Hugo Chavez out of your state, you should probably just.
If you don't want Hugo Chavez appointed as Biden's Secretary of Labor, you better vote. You better vote so they can block this. I mean, presumably. Right,
well, we gotta take a break here, but we will be back with more in a few. And if not, we will see you tomorrow. All right, folks, and we've said goodbye to the
Peacock crowd.
Peacock crowd, and we will be heading into the fun half of the program, wherein we will have more. And gosh, it is so sad to me to see what the troubles that Dave Rubin's been having, trying to predict this election, trying to figure out where he fits in. You know, it's a tough time. It's almost
it's a time of self-discovery.
It really is. It's almost like watching an adolescent. And, you know, I see this at home. And I have to say that my daughter, I think, is doing a better job of getting a sense of who she is and how she fits in this world than Dave Rubin has. I mean, Dave is like, I think it's on an emotional roller coaster. And I both at one time have a tremendous amount of sympathy for that. And then also a tremendous amount of enjoyment for it. And in fact, I would have to say the enjoyment outweighs the sympathy. In fact, almost like to the point where the sympathy is almost impossible to actually measure because of the enjoyment that I'm getting out of it. And we will talk more about that in the fun half. Just a reminder, it is your support that makes this show possible. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. Tomorrow on the program, we're going to do, we'll be talking about Joe Biden's cabinet appointees. At least to the extent that we know them, and more. just a reminder, like I say, your support makes this show possible. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. Check out the AM Quickie, amquickie.com. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Don't forget, Nomi's not doing her show today, but you can always check out her YouTube channel for some great interviews that she did last week at youtube.com/TheNomiKey Show, youtube.com/TheNomiKey Show, and you can become a member and support her program over at patreon.com/TheNomiKey Show. Jamie, what's happening on the Antifada? And Jamie's going to be joining us on the fun half as well.
Hey, so this week on the Antifada, we are having on Aaron Beninov, author of Automation and the Future of Work, which is sort of an interesting book disguised as automation theory, because he has a real critique of these automation theorists who believe that technological progress is going to free everybody from work and transition us, smoothly and seamlessly to communism or something like it, right? He's like, no, actually, it's not that simple. That's not the reason why the demand for labor is dropping worldwide. It's actually all of these really complicated things having to do with secular stagnation going back to the 1970s. It's the best left critique of a UBI that I've ever read. And after you get through all the complicated stuff, you are rewarded with a chapter on how we could organize the world in a way that actually makes sense. Spoiler alert, it's communism. So you guys can check that out on Wednesday.
I've heard really good things about this book, actually.
Wait, what's the name of the book again?
Automation and the Future of Work by Aaron Beninov. Beninov.
It good. Sounds really good.
Is that a new book?
Yeah, yep. It's very new. It just came out, and it also deals with the COVID crisis.
What else has he written in the past?
Oh, I'm not sure. The book is based on a couple articles in the New Left Review that were really interesting. And he was on a panel that I did at Red May with a few different people. But I didn't get to ask him all the stuff that I wanted to ask him. And, you know, I guess COVID was already a thing then, but it's even more of a thing now. So COVID, we're going to talk about that. So it still will not stop being a thing. So, yeah, you can, if you're interested, listen to that on Wednesday, patreon.com/TheAntifada.
Matt Leck, what is happening on TMBS?
A big old announcement tomorrow night on TMBS. David Griscom and I will be announcing something. So look forward to that. Also, there'll probably be some Twitch in the future. So twitch.com/literary hangover.
I was slow on the take there. All right, 646-257-3920 is the number, 646-257-3920. Join us in the fun half. You can IM the show by picking up the app at majorityapp.com. See you there.
RM for it.
All right, folks. 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
Who sent us this?
Alpha males are back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back.
Just as delicious as you can imagine.
The alpha males are back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back.
Just want to degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back.
I take all of it in my throat.
Alpha males are back.
Almost says what?
The alpha males are back.
You are a madman!
And the alpha males are back.
I am a total cunt.
Can we bring back DJ Danarchy song, please?
Yeah, or a couple of them. Just put them in rotation.
DJ Danarchy.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough of a break.
That's fucking nonsense.
Hey, fuck your mind.
I do not have Parkinson's.
And the alpha males are
psych.
Fuck them.
Almost says what?
What?
Almost says what?
Hell of a lot of bank.
Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
The alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black. African. The alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black.
You see Donald Trump out there? Doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keep it at 100. Can't knock the hustle.
Come on! Fuck them! Fuck them! Fuck them!
Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday!
My birthday!
Happy birthday to me, Jew boy!
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black. Alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black.
Come on!
To pay the price of blasphemy around here.
I am a total
pussy.